Who invited the Rasha to the Seder? Let's look in source number one. We know that we have these four sons, these four children. Not necessarily, they don't necessarily have to be males. And these four children who represent four personalities, four generations. I'm sure you have 5,000 Divrei Torah on who the four children are. You know, is the Rasha really a Rasha? Is the Chacham really a Chacham? Is who's the smartest one? Who's not the smartest one? Who's really the evil son? And et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What I want to talk about today is why would we even want such a personality at our Seder? If we think about it, the Rasha, Mahu Omer, Mahavo Dazot Lachem. Why do you want someone who's going to be at your Seder, who's just going to be causing trouble? Who's just going to be mocking and giving people a hard time? Ufisha, Shehotziya Tzmo Minakol Kafar Beikar. He's excluded himself from the people at large. He denies the foundations of our faith. You know, we always try. I can tell you from the experience of working with a school and different schools over the years of the students that we're taking into the school. And we always look at, well, not just is this student a good person on their own? Do they have good midot? Do they have skills? Do they have religious motivation, etc.? But we also look at how is this person going to impact the congregation, the tzibur, the klal? Are they going to be a positive impact on other people around them? Are they going to bring down the rest of the group? And that's a very hard thing to measure, but it's something that we would like to look for. So if we're sitting at our Seder, do we want a personality there who's toxic to the environment? Do we want someone there who's just going to mock and give a jaded perspective and have a lot of negativity? The pace of Seder is supposed to be joyous, it's supposed to be happy, it's supposed to be educational, it's supposed to be fun, it's supposed to be upbeat. And most of all, it's supposed to be positive, a positive Jewish experience. And if we have this Rasha, he's going to bring down the environment. So why is the Rasha in the Haggadah? Why is the Rasha invited to the Seder? To make the question even stronger, I want to look at a few citations from the Rambam and from other places in our Halakha, where it seems that the Rasha was actually left out of the Pesach experience. If you look in source number two, the Rambam, in Hilchot Chametz Matzah, he discusses what we know as the questions of these children, these four Arba Banim, and the Rambam goes through how we address each child. From the educator's perspective, the role of an educator, the role of a parent, is to look at each child, to look at each person and say, every person has their unique way of understanding, and we're going to address you where you are. Whatever your intellectual capacity is, whatever your spiritual capacity is. So the Rambam writes, it is a mitzvah to inform one son, even though they do not ask, as it states in Shmot Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Chet, you shall tell your son. Even if they don't ask, which child does that correspond to? Which child is a correspondent? The first source, Eini Yode Elisho. So far, one child is covered. Even the child that does not ask, we still have an obligation to teach them the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim. Let's keep going in source number two. A father should teach his son according to the son's knowledge. How is this applied? If the son is young or foolish, which son would that apply to? The Tam, the simple son. The Rambam writes, he should tell him, my son, in Egypt we were all slaves like this maidservant or the slave. On this night, the Holy One, blessed be He, redeemed us and took us out to freedom. So far, the Rambam has told us how we address two out of the four. The Rambam continues, if the son is older and wise, which son is this? The Chacham. How do we address this child differently than we address the Tam and differently than we address the Shana and Deli Shol? And the Rambam says he should inform him what happened to us in Egypt and the miracles wrought for us by Moshe our teacher. Everything according to the son's knowledge. Who's missing? Russia. The Rambam says we don't engage the Rasha. We don't address the Rasha. Some people say we don't address the Rasha because he's not even asking a question. Right? But the Rambam leaves him out. Now it's important to note this. We all know the Rambam wrote the Mishnah Torah, the book of Jewish law, the code of Jewish law. And in the code of Jewish law, he has a section called Hilchot Chametz Matzah, in which he lays out all of the rules of the Seder Shel Pesach. And you know what the Rambam does? In the 9th chapter, he writes a Haggadah. His own version of the Haggadah, which is very similar to our text, with some minor differences. I'll speak about one or two of them in a few moments. And guess what? In the Rambam's version of the Haggadah, you know who's there? The Rasha is there. But in Perek Zayin, 2 chapters earlier, when the Rambam talks about how to address each child at your table, each person at your table, he leaves out the Rasha. Yes?
Couldn't the Rasha be the first one because he's not going to ask a question because he's just like...
Mahavodah zot lachem. It's hard to say that he's not asking a question.
What's his question?
You can work in and say, well, maybe it's not really a question, but he's definitely saying something to everybody else at the table.
No, but like, maybe it's like the question if it's asking, like, what is like the miracle? And that sense, and like the rest of them ask, what's this big deal about? Like,
I'm not sure. I think it's a tough sell.
He's not asking to acquire knowledge.
I think it's a tough sell. He wants to understand something. We're going to talk about it soon. The Rasha is bothered by something. We're going to see many, many interpretations. We're going to try to stick to one direction here. But the simple reading, your question is taken, but the simple reading is that this is not the Rasha. And the Rasha is missing. Why don't we address him? And why does the Rambam leave him out in the Halachot, but include him in the Haggadah? So why is he invited to the Seder if we're not even given instruction of how to deal with him. Pardon?
Other children's answers.
Okay. Okay. Good. Let's try to dig a little deeper. There is a halacha when it comes to Korban Pesach. We should be zocher to eat the Korban Pesach. Umher v'yameinu. Amen. And the halacha is a pasuk in Book of Shmon, Perek Yud Bet, which discusses all the laws of the Korban Pesach, and it says like this: Kol ben nechar lo yochal bo. The Lord said to Moshe and Aaron, this, zot chukat ha-Pesach, kol ben nechar lo yochal bo. Anyone who is a ben nechar, source number 3, an estranged one, we'll define who that's referring to in a moment, is not allowed to eat the Korban Pesach. Says the Rambam, in the laws of Korban Pesach, in a few places, I just brought one example in source number 4, one who gives an olive-sized portion, a kezayit, of the Korban Pesach, whether it's from the first Pesach or from Pesach Sheni, to an mumar, an apostate, a person who worships Avodah Zarah, to a ger toshav or to a non-Jew, violates a negative commandment. You're not allowed to give Korban Pesach, not just to a non-Jew, but to a Jew who has gone against Hashem, who has gone against the Torah. This is interesting. Within the mitzvah of eating Korban Pesach, there are certain Jews that are not allowed to participate in that experience. And you know who they are? People that are like the Rasha. People that are rejecting the foundations of our faith. Kafar ve'ikar. Hold off for one second. Okay. So you're not allowed, they're not allowed to eat it on their own, and you're not allowed to give it to them. But here's what's interesting. We have the Rasha there. So why is it that the Rasha who doesn't get to participate in Achila Korban Pesach, and the Rasha who doesn't really get to participate, at least the way the Rambam is organizing it, in the Seder? Why is that? What is a mumar? Let's take it one step further. The Rambam writes in Hilchot Shuvah, what is the definition of a person who we kind of kick out of our community? The definition of a person we kick out of our community is a person who has removed themselves from our community by choice. Look how the Rambam phrases it. Source 5. It's the Rambam Hilchot Tshuva. An example of an apostate in regard to the entire Torah is the one who turns to the faith of the Gentiles. When they enact harsh decrees, things are bad for the Jews. There's bad things going on in Israel. And you say, you know what? Now's not really a great time for the Jewish people. What value do I have in clinging to Israel while they are debased and pursued? It's better to... I'm going to go with the winners. Whoever's winning, I'm going to join them. That's a person who's choosing to exclude themselves from the difficulties and the challenges that the Jewish people are engaging in. In Hebrew, it's called Poresh Midarkei Tzibur. Person who separates himself from the community. And the Rambam goes further. A person who separates himself from the congregation of Israel and does not fulfill mitzvah together with them, does not take part in their hardships. Jewish people are going through tzarot. Person says, not my issue, not my problem. Or join in their communal fasts, but rather goes on their own individual path as if he is from another nation and not Israel, does not have a portion in the world to come. And if we're reading the Rasha straight, and we're not giving nice, fluffy Dvar Torahs that the Rasha is really a good guy, and this, we're calling him a Rasha, and we're reading it straight. Let's call him who he is. This is not a person we want to be influencing the other members of our Seder. This is not a child that we want to be joining together at the Pesach Seder. He doesn't even really want to be there. He trudged his feet to get into the room. So why is he there? Why are we even letting him in? Why did we give him an invitation? Yeah.
With Source 5, we learned in Jewish history that there was like one of the rabbis, he said that like if you had converted to Christianity because it was so hard, then when you got, like when you were about to die, you could convert back.
That's a halacha in the Gemara. A Jew who has sinned meaning converted out, is still a Jew. You can't convert out of Judaism. There's no such a thing. Poresh Midarkei Tzibur is different. Poresh Midarkei Tzibur is saying that this, you're right, the person could do tshuva. They could return. But they've made a decision to separate themselves from the community. And that, in many ways, is even harsher than converting to another religion. Okay? Let's take it one step further, turn to the backside, and then we'll answer the question. And here's the turning point. There's a Midrash, the Mechilta, and the Midrash says something very interesting. We just said a moment ago that a Ben Nechar, a person who has rejected Torah, a person who has rejected the suffering of the community. This person is not allowed to eat the Korban Pesach. But the Pasuk says, Zot Chukat HaPesach. So the Midrash says the word Zot teaches me that it limits. Meaning, this Ben Nechar, this person who's rejected Torah, that person is not allowed to eat the Pesach, meaning the lamb meat, the shawarma, okay? But what can that person eat? The matzah and the maror. Not only this, says the Midrash, but there's a rule when it comes to Korban Pesach. Not everybody brings their own lamb. You usually sign up with somebody else who owns a lamb. They're not going to eat the whole thing themselves. They're going to have a whole bunch of people that are going to eat it with them. Their family, friends, whoever wants to be part of it. So let's say this Mumar, for whatever reason, decided that he's going to give his lamb as the Korban Pesach. He's not allowed to eat it. But he has all these people who are signed on to his lamb for Korban Pesach. Says the Midrash, one would have thought that he, the Ben Nechar, would invalidate the Chabur that comes with him, the group. Therefore, it's written, Zot, this, Zot Chukat HaPesach. He does not invalidate the Chabur that comes with him. The only thing he's not allowed to do is eat the Pesach. He should not partake of it, meaning he cannot eat it, he can't eat the Korban Pesach, but he can eat of the matzah and the maror. So this Rasha, this Mumar, this guy who's rejected the whole Torah, is allowed to sit with everybody in Yerushalayim, Yer HaKodesh, while they're eating their Pesach, and he can sit there eating matzah and maror. Isn't that amazing? So we let him in. We do let him in. We kind of let him in, we kind of reject him. Which one is it? Is the Rasha there, or is the Rasha not there?
By that logic, is a non-Jew also allowed to give his lamb?
Would have to be owned by a Jew. He would have had to gift it to a Jew in order for it to be used. But yes, meaning he could give up the lamb, but it has to belong to a Jewish person. Okay? Great question. So let's turn a little bit. This is a turning source. This is the source that will transition us from our big question about the Rasha to seeing where is this person's place in our Pesach holiday. Source number 7, we say to the Rasha, if you turn back to source 1 actually, what's our answer? Afata haked shina ve'emor lo. Bavur zeh asa Hashem li b'tzeitim Mitzrayim. Li ve'lo lo. Hashem took me out of Mitzrayim. Li. What's li? me, for me, implying, but not for him. If we're talking to this child, it should say, Lecha. Everybody asks. And in fact, the original version of this phrase in our Haggadah, source number 7, has it just as Tiferet said. So why does our Haggadah change the phraseology?
He's not talking to him.
He's there at the table. The Rosh is there. So part of the answer is, it's amazing note in psychology, you're already touching on it. Sometimes when you want to teach somebody a lesson, you don't want to say it to their face. You don't want to be confrontational. You can talk about what you want them to know. Sometimes you have people who get up and say a speech at a bar mitzvah or something, and they say, I'm going to talk to my son Moshe, and if anybody else wants to listen in, you can listen in. But the message is to that person. So here's the opposite. I'm going to talk to the whole table, and if the Rasha listens in, what's the Rasha going to hear? He's going to hear, wow, he got to leave Mitzrayim, and then he's going to start thinking about himself, and he's going to say, hey, they're talking about me. I'm the one that wouldn't have left Mitzrayim. I'm the one that they're talking about that wouldn't have been able to be saved, to leave. And then they'll say, hey, maybe I should change my ways. Hey, maybe I should change my life. So why is the Rasha at our Seder? The Rasha is at our Seder in order for us to show him that we can take that part of who he is away from him. That we can remove that kernel that's inside of that person, which really, really isn't who that person is deep inside. That person's a Rasha, they made certain decisions, they've done certain things in their life, but that shouldn't define them. We don't like to label children in general. So the Arba Banim is a very kind of non-modern type of idea. That this child is this way, this child is that way. We don't like to do that. We don't like to label. So if we're saying this person's a Rasha, really what we want to say is, we want you to be at the Seder, we understand you've made certain decisions that may put you outside of the community, but we want to bring you back in. We want to show you that you do have a place at this table. You do have a place in this beautiful religion. And what we say, so I put what I just mentioned to you is in source number 8, the Vilna Gaon in his commentary on the Haggadah, he writes, Lo tashiv lo klal. We don't speak directly to the Rasha. Raki ma'acher ha-yoshev ita. We're speaking to the other people at the table, and hopefully he listens in. V'zeh acher lo shal klal. The other person didn't ask anything. It was the Rasha who asked the question. Right? So he says, Liba lo lo, kalashon nistar, klomar ala Rasha. You're talking about the Rasha, but you're not talking directly to the Rasha. So here's the answer of the Rambam. I heard this thought from Rabbi Taub. It's an amazing, Rabbi Taub used to be the rabbi at the Bayit at Thornhill. It's an amazing idea in the Rambam. We know that there's a saying, it's based on a midrash that Rashi brings, that 4/5 of the Jewish people did not leave Mitzrayim. Okay? It's not the simple reading of the text. The text says in source number 9, Vayasev Elokim et am derech amibar yamsuf, v'chamushim alu b'nei yisom eretz Mitzrayim, which means that the Jewish people left Egypt armed with weapons. They were ready for any type of battle that would come their way. But the Midrash says Rashi in source number 9, another interpretation, chimushim, means divided by 5, meaning that 1 out of 5 Jews went out and 4/5 died during the 3 days of darkness. Who were the Jews that died during the 3 days of darkness? The Rishayim, the ones who wanted to stay. It's a midrash, but it's an important perspective. Because if, as the Rambam writes in source number 10, Chayav Adam, and we're going to say it in the Haggadah in just over 1 week, Chayav Adam lirod et atzmo kilu yatza mimitzrayim, a person's supposed to do what? See themselves as if they left Mitzrayim. You know what the Rambam adds to this phrase, his version? I mentioned to you that the version of the Rambam's Haggadah is a little bit different. Chayav Adam, not lirod et atzmo, but leharot et atzmo, which means to do what? To present yourself to do certain things, certain actions, which bring out a feeling as if you are going through it yourself. So listen to this. Stick with me for this. This is amazing. So if we're supposed to feel like we're actually leaving Mitzrayim, we're supposed to go through the experience, then who are the people that actually left? The 1/5. Who are the people that didn't leave? If our Pesach Seder is supposed to be exactly what it was like just in the year 2016, then the Rishayim aren't going to be part of our experience at the Seder. That's exactly why the Rambam left out the Rasha in his halacha. Because the Rasha didn't leave Mitzrayim. The Rasha wasn't part of that experience. So then why does the Rambam include him in his Haggadah text? Because we want him to rejoin the community. We want that person to know that he doesn't have to live that way anymore. And if he's sitting at that Pesach Seder in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, Mervi Amein, Amein, we should be there soon. And all of the people in the room are eating their matzah maror and lamb shawarma, basically. And he's sitting there with his nebuch matzah and maror because he can't participate in the Pesach part of it. And he looks on at all these Jews enjoying their, and he says, hey, that could be me. That could be me. And they're all looking at that person and they're saying, yeah, that could be you. All you have to do is move a little bit, is change a little bit, is make a certain decision that you want to be better. And that's what we do for the Rasha. As the Rambam writes in Hilchot Talmud Torah, which is the strangest place for this halakha, source number 11, Torah should be taught only to a proper student. However, a potential student who follows bad ways should be influenced to correct their behavior and trained to follow a straight path. After he repents, his deeds are examined, he's allowed to enter the house of study to be instructed. This should be in the laws of tshuva. What do I do with a student who hates God, who hates Judaism, who hates davening, who hates everything? I've never heard of such a student. Never. They shouldn't be allowed to come to the yeshiva. Shouldn't be allowed to learn Torah. Right? Same way we don't invite them. No. Says the Rambam. Hilchot Talmud Torah. This is a law in Talmud Torah. This isn't a law in tshuva. It's a law in Talmud Torah. Part of our religion is believing in every person. That they can be part of that table. They can join in that table. They can see the beauty of what's taking place at that Pesach Seder. And it's so beautiful. One Gemara here, we'll just study together and then we'll wrap up. Source number 12. It's a Gemara about Rabbi Meir and his wife. Rabbi Meir's wife, his name was Bruria, one of the brightest women in all of Jewish history. Famous Bruria. And Rabbi Meir had a fight with his wife. And here's what they fought about. There was a certain group of criminals who lived in Rabbi Meir's neighborhood. They were tormenting him excessively to the extent that he was praying that they should die. Said Bruria, his wife, to him, what's your rationale? What's your reasoning? Is it because it says in Tehillim, Yitamu chatai min haaretz, let sin cease from the world? Yitamu chatai min haaretz, that's not what it says. She says to her husband, Rabbi Meir. It doesn't say, Yitamu choti min haaretz. It doesn't say that the sinners should be removed from the earth, from the world. It says, chataim. What was Rabbi Meir praying for? He was praying that they would die. You know what his wife said? You're reading the words of the pasuk wrong. It doesn't say, eliminate. It doesn't say, eliminate the... It doesn't say, eliminate the... sinners, it says eliminate the sins. So instead of praying for them to die, you know what you should pray for? Pray for them to do tshuva. Because we believe that every person can return. We believe that every person has the potential to come back. We have to believe in them. And we can only believe in them if we invite them. If we invite them in. And you know what? We have a lot we can learn from the Rasha. There's a lot we can learn from the Rasha. When the Rasha says to us, Ma ha'avodah hazot lachem, how many people here would have a good answer to that question? Why are you Jewish? Ma ha'avodah hazot lachem, it's a great question. It's actually one of the most important questions you should have as a Jew. And it's the Rasha who's asking that question because it matters. So we stop and we say, Ah, kafar ba'ikar. Some of the commentaries say, he's a Rasha, he'll only keep Judaism if he knows the reasons. He'll only do it if he has the reasons why. That's not a way to keep the religion. So look at Jonathan Sachs, source 13. Beautiful commentary from his Haggadah. He says, we need to find ways of showing how Judaism lifts us to greatness. When that happens, people will not ask, Ma avodah zot lachem, why all the hard work? Why are we doing this? Why are we sitting and taking out a piece of paper and measuring our matzah and measuring our maror and worrying about drinking the right amount of wine in every detail? Why? So he says, neither an athlete going for an Olympic gold medal nor a scientist trying a new line of research ever asked that question. Nor did Steve Jobs at Apple or Jeff Bezos at Amazon. They never asked why all the hard work. They understood that there was a reason for it. There was a purpose for it. The pursuit of greatness always involves hard work. The real challenge of our time is to rediscover why Judaism, because it asks great things from us, lifts us to greatness. And what Rabbi Sacks here is saying is, that's what the Rasha is screaming at us at our Seder. And we have to engage the Rasha, because it's an important question. Ma ha'avodah hazot lachem. It comes from him, because it comes from a place of, I've struggled with this question, but I don't think you've struggled with this question. Why is it important? Why is it important? Why is it important to you? And each one of us should ask that question. And I'll just conclude with Rabbi Riskin's comment here, just beautiful. What perspective we're supposed to have on this person at our Seder. We must embrace them as part of our family, love them because we are part of them, and they are part of us. Regale them with the stories, songs, and special foods which are expressed in our biblical and national literature that emerge from our challenging fate and our unique destiny. Share with them our vision and dreams of human freedom and peace, and accept them wholeheartedly, no matter what. So why do we invite the Rasha to our Seder? We invite the Rasha to our Seder because we want the Rasha to know that even with his struggles, their struggles, his, her struggles, they still have a place at our table. And their place at our table is a real place at our table. Not, oh yeah, you can come also, but we don't really want you here. We want them there because we want, number one, to show them that really they're not a Rasha. And number two, we want them there because they have questions that we need to really be thinking about. Chag Sameach. Everybody have a great day.